Welcome back. As you know, this is the month of Ramadan, and these days I'm discussing the philosophy, the history of Islam. And today I'm going to focus on the central, the primary text, that is the Holy Quran. And I'm not specifically going to talk about the contents of it. I'll get into it, but only briefly. But more importantly, I'll talk about the approach that we should take while reading the text. And for that, I've got the works of Asghar Ali Engineer with me. He was a reformist Muslim and a scholar. So let's start with the book itself, the Holy Quran. And first of all, we have to understand that both for Muslims and non-Muslims, it's important to understand how do we go about reading this book. Because there's a lot of confusion, a lot of contradictions out there. And what people do generally is that they pick a few verses from here and there, and then they quote those verses to make a particular point about the religion. And both practicing Muslims as well the opponents, they do this, and I don't think that's a fair approach. If you really want to understand a religion, if you want to understand its scripture, you have to get to the very basics of it, understand the values of it, see the context in which it was revealed. And in the previous podcasts, if you go back and see, I have talked about it, the context, the background, the history in which this was set. And all of that has had a great impact on the religion itself. However, when we talk about the Quran, that is supposed to be a never-changing document. It has to remain the same, unlike many other aspects of the religion. But even in this case, the approach matters, because if we do not interpret it correctly or spend enough effort on its interpretation, our understanding might not be correct. So, for those of you who are new to this, who don't know about the book much, let me start with the very basics. This book, the Quran, it was revealed to Prophet Muhammad, and then there was subsequent commentary, you might say, or what happened was when people asked him about the meaning of these verses, the context, he answered their questions, and all those sayings of the Prophet, they were collected in the form of hadith. So these are two of the primary texts of Islam. First is the Quran, and then the hadith, which were later collected, the different sayings and words of the Prophet. So that's the primary literature that you have, or as it is called, the tafsir literature. As I've already talked about the political and social and cultural aspects of the religion in the earlier podcasts, I talk about it. So those contexts, once again, they do matter when we try to understand the book. There are certain verses which are to be understood in spiritual context, and there are some which will have a particular social, political or cultural dimension. And that's going to be really important. So I give you one example. The Sharia, the Islamic law that was later created based on the Islamic teachings, it adopted a particular mono-level approach, and therefore it created many problems for itself. Because this approach, what they did was they picked certain Quranic verses and then they literally interpreted them without really seeing the context, how they need to be applied in different societies. And that happens even today. And then you get very crude, very sometimes disturbing interpretations. For example, this particular verse from chapter 2, the verse number is 278, it talks about the matters of murder. It says, "O you who believe, retaliation is prescribed for you in the matter of the slain, the free for free, and the slave for slave, and the female for female. But if remission is made to one by his aggrieved brother, prosecution should be according to usage and payment to him in a good manner. This is alleviation from your Lord and a mercy. Whosoever exceeds the limit after this will have a painful chastisement." So it is on this basis, this is just an example and there are many more, the Sharia provides some kind of eye for eye, nose for nose, ear for ear approach. And that might not sound too pleasing to a lot of people. Now, here's the challenge with its interpretation. First of all, you have to see the text at different levels. For example, at moral level, the book is talking about, you know, forgiveness. You have to forgive wherever you can rather than going for retaliation. Second of all, is this particular verse that I just mentioned, if you observe it, the first verse, it is talking about the tribal times. It is talking about a tribal practice and tribal ways of doing justice. So in this case, you will see the book is taking realistic as well as moral view of these practices. On the realistic level, it retains the tribal practice, of course, by reforming it to make it rigorously just, and then treats it at moral level by invoking higher moral values. And to grasp it really at a deeper level, we have to understand that the Quran treats all these matters on three levels. First of all, it treats it at realistic level and adds to it another dimension of reform. So for example, in the earlier tribal practice, it was extremely crude. It is trying to preserve it so that, you know, people can adopt the practice, but thereby bringing necessary reforms to it. And then the second level is the moral level. Here, it's trying to invoke the higher moral value of mercy, forgiveness. And then the third level is the punishment if one exceeds the limits even after this. So it's not really fair to rigidly follow it at one level and rigidly ignore all the other levels. And that is something you find in Sharia in most societies, that they're very rigidly treating it at one level and ignoring the other levels, ignoring the forgiveness part, ignoring the moral aspect of it. And that, I think, it's not really fair. And that's really an important discussion that needs to happen in Muslim societies across the world at a massive scale. Common people need to get involved in it. They need to understand what are the depths of these teachings so that they can enrich their lives. Another thing that we need to understand is that values, for example, they are immutable, they are kind of permanent, whereas the laws or different ways to attain those values, they are not really permanent. Unfortunately, what has happened in a number of Muslim societies is that those laws, they have become permanent. But Muslims, they keep forgetting this, that they were just the means to the end to achieve those certain Islamic values. They were not the ends in themselves. For example, you often hear about the practice of burqa or hijab. That was practiced to attain a particular value, which in this case would be the modesty of a woman. But let's say if a woman or the society, rest of the society, is practicing their modesty and they are wearing, let's say, pants and shirts, that value is being achieved by that. So we have to be clear about it, that what are the ways, what are the paths that we are choosing to achieve a particular goal. That goal is important, and it can be based on different cultures. If it's an Arabic culture, they might be wearing a particular dress. If it's an Indian culture, that man or woman might be wearing something else. What matters is the value, what you're trying to achieve. And this is the kind of nuance, this is the kind of depth that is lacking in a number of cases when you talk about the Sharia. People have made it static, but it doesn't have to be so. Changes need to be accommodated. And there are certain cases where there are different aspects of Sharia that you find in different societies, and they adjust wherever they adjust, the society can keep growing and flourishing. But if they remain static, hell-bent on a particular rule which is not really serving their purpose of values, the society is not really going to grow that well. A similar example that you can find, and particularly that we have seen here in India, in Indian society among the Muslims, was the practice of marriage. When you read the Quran, and I'm going to read different verses, for example, this one, chapter 7, verse 189, it says, "It is He who created you from a single soul, and of the same did He make His mate, that He might find comfort in her. Thus, husband finds comfort in his wife." And further, the verse tells us, "So when he covers her, she bears a light burden, then moves about with it. Then when it grows heavy, they both call upon Allah, their Lord. If you give us a good one, we shall certainly be the grateful." So this particular verse is talking about woman getting pregnant, and then both husband and wife, they praying to God to give them a good child. So marriage in this case is lifted to a moral plane and is made to develop firm bonds between the husband and the wife, so they can create a healthy relationship. So marriage, another verse before I go on to make the point, another verse, which is chapter 30, verse 21, it says, "And of his signs is this, that he created mates for you from yourselves, that you might find quiet of mind in them, and he put between you love and compassion." So these couple of quotes and many more, you read them, you find that marriage, according to the Quran, is both a contract and a moral bond. So it serves both purposes. It takes you at a moral level where you morally feel bound for your responsibilities, but it's also a contract where you can agree to certain terms and conditions. Both husband and wife, they determine their terms and conditions, and if the time comes, they might want to part their ways. However, sadly, the point that I was going to make in our societies that I've seen, that Muslim jurists they completely overlook this moral aspect of marriage or divorce, and they created this practice where it was very easy for husband to divorce his wife by saying the talaq word 3 times, and because of that a lot of legal troubles arose in the country because women were not getting their rights, and a lot of people complained about it and complained about the religion itself and criticized it. Of course, that will happen when you will overlook the values and get stuck on a particular point without understanding the depth. So it should have been the other way around. First focusing on the value, the moral value attached to it, and then getting into the practical aspects, the contractual aspects of it. In fact, there is another verse that really talks about the relationship of man and woman in a, you know, which gives really a comprehensive view of it. It says, surely men who submit and the women who submit and the believing men and believing women and obeying men and obeying women and the truthful men and truthful women and the patient men and patient women and the humble men and the humble women and the charitable men and the charitable women and the fasting men and fasting women and the men who guard their chastity and the women who guard and the men who remember Allah much and women who remember Allah has prepared for them forgiveness and a mighty reward. So the relationship between the man and woman and their roles in the eyes of the God, they're quite sometimes different but equal without really discrimination. The nature of relationship is functional, but it is also elevated at a spiritual level. Another point that often arises is the half witness, or women being the half witness or receiving half the share in inheritance. Those are again the challenges which have to be observed in at different levels considering the cultural background, because most of the women back then, they were not working and they were the non-earning member of the family. So in that case, they were getting their share accordingly. They were not really working. The family was not dependent on them. But if you get to a society where there is only female member and she's responsible for earning in her family, then of course we have to look into the context. Then we should apply that. Just blindly following that practice which was supposed to be for a housewife and you apply that for a working woman, how is that fair? But that's something that often we see in Muslim societies, and that's something that many Muslims need to understand. Similarly, the other controversial verses include the cutting of hands, the flogging of criminals. So that they too, in many societies, people miss the point. The point was first the moral reforms, giving the offender an opportunity to become a better person. However, when they refuse to become the better person, they refuse to reform, then there is the punishment. But if we want to practice these things, we want to apply these values, we have to understand their context. Otherwise, we'll only end up the society more miserable. And that wasn't really the point. That was not really the point of religion. The point was to make this society a better place. And that's why it's important. It's important for non-Muslims to understand the depths or the philosophy of it. But it's also important, and I would say more important, for Muslims to understand the depths of their religion and then making their society better. not really getting stuck somewhere in the past, but reforming, improving their lives, improving the lives of people around them. Only then can you think of doing justice with yourself and with the religion. So that's the conversation for today. We'll talk about more about the philosophy of it, or and more details about these controversial verses, and I hope you'll enjoy this series and these episodes. If you have particular questions, please let me know. I'll talk more about the philosophy, as I said, in the coming episodes. So stay tuned. Thank you. Thank you very much.